Welcome to König Kunst. I'm Johann König and I'm speaking to Chris Martin. Chris is a Belgian conceptual artist whose work consists of monumental and small-scale sculptures, drawings and interventions. Recurring themes in his works are notion of time, history, transcendence of human existence and vanitas. Welcome Chris Martin. We were just thinking where we met, we can't really remember, but it's about 18 years now we've been working together, no?
2005.
So maybe you can take us to the beginning of your art practice, because maybe important as a quick introduction is that you work with concepts, you're conceptual artists, I would say, but a sculptor at the same time, but you work a lot with objet trouvés, like found elements. But how did your art practice start?
Yeah, I had something in my mind and I made a piece, my very first piece on in a field in November and on the countryside. So for nobody, I didn't want to bother anybody with it. I got a tent from the Boy Scouts and I got some beer of a local brewer, and I invited my family and friends and I said, okay, nobody will be there. But it was very cold and people had to drag themselves through 400 meters of mud. And nevertheless, there were 200 people on the spot. It was like unexpectedly successful. And one of them was Jan Hoet Jr., the son of Jan Hoet, the curator. And the next day I had to go to the Smak Museum in Ghent to explain what I had done. And the next day I was in Zonsbeek in Arnhem as an artist.
So you invited people to do what?
Just I announced that I made a piece in a field and they came to watch it. It was close to my hometown and there was a huge battle in 1708 between the French and the Allies. And 9,000 soldiers were buried on that spot. And I have found the exact spot. And meantime, there was corn. It was a cornfield. And I asked the local farmer, could I pay you for letting 9,000 plants stand on the spot during winter? And on the corners, there was a fierce light. And they looked like an army, those plants, you know, with plumes on the heads. And then you have the corn, it's like ammunition. Mm-hmm. But by the wind and the frost, they go down. That's one big bunch of miserable, dying soldiers, mm-hmm. if you use your imagination a little bit. It was just an installation on the field commemorating those 9,000 deaths underneath.
And what was the next day with the museum?
Well, I next day I had to present myself and my work to Jan Hoet, because his son was a visitor the night before. And he told it apparently to his father, I met a guy who did this and this. And Jan Hoet told me, okay, great, you can go to Arnhem, because I'm busy with Zonsbeek, the exhibition taking place every 5 to 7 years. And okay, I take the train to Arnhem, and there was a house used as a kind of headquarters. And I said, I'm Chris Martin, and I'm participating in the show. They said, oh, no, it's impossible. Of course not. Yeah, but I said I was on the train for 3 hours. So it would be nice to check it with Jan Hoet. So they call him, and they say, okay, Jan is saying you have to go to the park and you can do whatever you want.
Interesting.
And that was actually the start. So the start was only lasting for like 2 days.
Interesting. Maybe as an introduction for people who don't know, Jan Hoet is was an important curator who invented the format called Chambre d'Ami, which was an exhibition in the houses of private people. So you rang the door and walked up the third floor and went into the living room, and there was then a Günter Förg or something like this, which actually we will talk about a little bit later, because the Berlin Biennial somehow picked up this concept where you were taking part in. So, because originally you were trained as an architect, right?
Yes, but I knew from my childhood that I would never become an architect, but an artist. I was drawing all the time. I didn't have toys. At Christmas, it was difficult. I mean, what to give to me or my birthday or something. I just needed pencils and markers. That's the only thing I wanted. But anyway, I chose for an education that is quite interesting, because architecture is nice because you learn about proportions, you learn about materials, where materials come together. This is called details. You think as an artist you don't have to interfere with technical matter, but it's enormous how technical it can go. And it's good that you have like a basic knowledge about that. Also, to deal with space and light, for instance, if a truck is standing in front of a museum full of your works and the museum is empty, to give your work a space, it's very helpful if you are used to deal with space and if you know how to deal with light. So every now and then I make exhibitions for others, just for fun, with their works.
And so now you were in Sonsbeck, so what did you do there?
Well, I had nothing with me, and it was just the very, very beginning of my practice. So I went to the park in order to see whether I could use something existing. And there was a huge statue of Hendrik Antoon Lorentz, and that was a physician from the city of Arnhem in the 20s. And he was actually, together with Max Planck and other colleagues, preparing the theory of Einstein. He didn't do it by himself. The formula was then actually invented by Einstein, but everything, his knowledge, was of course based on the knowledge of previous physicians.
Scientists. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and so this Lorentz, to keep it short, was specialized in magnetism. And okay, he had a huge bronze statue because the people of Arnhem was very, very proud of him. And then 200 meters further, there was like another bronze sculpture of about the same period, the 20s, of a young girl kneeling in front of the water, in front of a pond.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to take him off his pedestal and I installed him like 30 meters behind the girl. So he's just looking to this girl.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very romantic scenery, and I called the piece Verkleerde Nacht, Transfigured Night, based on a piece of music by Arnold Schoenberg. And the people of Arnhem were very, very angry because, you made this big physician a pedophile. And I had something like, okay, when you are looking to the beauty of a young girl, are you per definition then attracted to, I mean, how far have we come? But I don't want to talk further about
this. Okay, but interesting is, so you juxtaposed two sculptures with another to create a
completely
new image.
A new story as well, because he was standing with his feet in the grass. There was no title, no name. It's just a man looking at a girl.
Mm-hmm. So, but you were then already decided to take the path of a visual artist.
Absolutely, yes. And you are mentioning conceptual. For me, it's all the same. I see myself as a very, very classical artist, because in the end, I make images. Everything comes to an image, how conceptual it might be. It comes to matter that carries, in the best case, the intention you, or the thought you have. Same what I'm doing now in the church in Berlin. It's almost nothing, but it's not nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need a minimum of matter to express.
Yeah, so when you say you're creating images, that somehow on a way leads us to this piece you showed here at the Berlin Biennial. I remember I came across your work and then I told Maurizio Cattelan, who was one of the curators of the Berlin Biennial with Massimiliano and Ali. They had this concept of creating an exhibition on Auguststrasse, the entire street in Auguststrasse in Berlin. And I told them about your work and said, I think this could be interesting for you. And then they invited you to show the, I call it billboard. Actually, it's a more like a travel flatboard known from...
that you can see in railway stations and airports.
And actually something probably also an object of the past now. I mean, this is about 15 years ago, but it's like one of these boards which has gate, destination, time...
flight number, gate number, everything, just information. And it's a system of many, many turning flaps on rotors, and the flaps are printed with digits and letters. And actually, it's still the best system that you can use for that purpose, because it's very, very cheap in maintenance and it's quite strong. But nevertheless, they are taking them away now. So actually, it's a little bit something of the past, like you say. And the only reason why they are doing it is because you cannot make publicity with those flaps.
No advertising.
Yeah. And you know, that's an income that is very important for airports and so. And that's the only reason why they are taking them away, because they are better than LED screens and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Better than electronic systems.
And it's interesting because they create this amazing sound of going places.
So these, yeah, so this rattling, like, people love the sound, but per definition, I think it's a very ugly sound, but everybody loves the sound because it makes you dream of your destination. And I can imagine if you see Tahiti and, it's fantastic, it makes you dream. But then when you finally arrive in Tahiti, you're super tired, and then the hotel is not what you want, and then the food is not okay, mm-hmm. and somebody is not friendly to you, and then you get in this reality. But as long as you're not there, you're not in reality. And that's exactly why I use this medium to express basically nothing. Because I don't like to talk so much about themes in my work. I prefer to talk about motives, things that come back mm-hmm. every time. And one of the motives is transience, death, and also the void. Because we are living in an information world, and more you can, the war in Ukraine, it's like a TV show, you know, you can follow it. Mm-hmm. Huh?
Doom scrolling. Actually, it's interesting that you mentioned it, because I just thought of the Ukraine. I was in Vienna, and of course we all knew what would happen, and I hardly slept because I was watching the news. So I arrive in the airport, and I look for my gate. You know, I look and I see London, Munich, Hamburg, mm-hmm. Berlin, Kiev, cancelled, mm-hmm. and you know every other city had a gate indicated. And the delay or whatever, but the flights were going and only Kiev was cancelled. Mm. And it was such a crazy experience, because of course I was fully aware war is happening, but at the same time, to see this, you know, physically, I'm going to Berlin, and you know, there was a plane scheduled to go at that moment, and people were booked on that plane mm-hmm. to meet their fiance or mother or start yeah. a new job or whatever, and then it's cancelled, you know. So it's like, and then suddenly it became so so real, because there was this weird connection.
But it's maybe stronger in your imagination than you are just watching TV, you know, because then you fully realize, hey, this is crazy, you know.
Yeah,
because you have a very strong imagination. I mean, it's more triggering than
seeing actual attacks.
Yes, yeah. And a suggestion can be more shocking.
Yeah,
but okay, it's meant to give information. This piece, but the flipboard was functioning perfectly, but all flaps were black, and it was moving completely at random. So every now and then you have an update, daga 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 daga, and then it's quiet for a while, and then you have one flap or two flaps or two rows.
But you did not run precise connection there.
No, no. So I asked the company in Udine, in the north of Italy, to make a system that was completely at random. And they say, oh, piece of cake. I mean, but it turned out to be highly difficult, because they saw that now every now and then a movement was coming back, or a combination was coming back. And they called me from the factory and they said, Mr. Martin, it's impossible. We cannot make a system that is completely at random. So I went back by plane. I went back to the company to see who was in charge. And there was a huge space with all people who were making programs. Mm-hmm. And only one lady. I went to the lady and I said, I want a system that is completely at random. And no movement should come back, because you have billions of combinations. And she did it in 2 hours. So I'm a positive sexist. I mean, she could deal with chaos, you know, and man couldn't. Mm-hmm. They couldn't help making a system again and again and again.
Yeah.
Very funny. She just did it. And this improved actually the programming of their functional flipboards. But now, back to the piece.
And that was in a church. So you had this Protestant.
That was up in a church that was out of service. I discovered something very important there for me. I saw people, and they didn't know that I was the artist, so that's a big advantage. You can observe them. And I saw people standing in front of the flipboard for like half an hour without expecting something to appear.
Yeah.
They was just enjoying the void. And that's what I'm telling, I was telling a couple of minutes ago, like we are living in an information world, but to have no information, to have like an empty frame that you can fill in yourself, can be very, very good for people. Like, I can give another example. We can talk about that later, but to just have nothing can be very, very positive. Just something empty.
So you were thinking about
a blank sheet of paper, you know, no information. And at the same time, it is information because it's a metaphor for life. When I was much younger, it was back in 2002. So it's 20 years ago. I was 30 years. And the flipboard was already hanging in the Smak Museum in Ghent, the Museum of Jan Hoet.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to show it for his officially last exhibition. And there was nobody in the museum anymore. And there was just a cleaning woman with a machine cleaning the floor. And I said, "Excuse me, madam, can I ask you something? What do you think of this piece?" And she said, "Oh, look, sir, I'm totally not busy with art and actually not interested even. I don't see what could be interesting, except for this. Because normally you see this in airports and it says where to go and when. And here you don't see anything, and that's life. For me, that's life, but you are too young to understand." But that was the biggest compliment I ever got.
Were you thinking about the altar you did? Because maybe it's, I would describe it, I mean, you are from Ghent, and the Genter altar is like the cultural icon and somehow the identity also of an entire country, maybe. And you took the same, the shape and the fields.
Yeah, a replica of the frame.
A replica of the frame.
Yeah.
And put it into landscapes, right? On the ocean front, into the sky, into a mountain view, into, I mean, any places. Even would you even install it on a dumpster?
Not really.
No.
No. I am not fond of dumpsters, but I know what you mean. But it could function because it could frame also problems. It shouldn't frame only the beauty.
But you put it only on beautiful places.
So far, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where else was it? It was in the mountain view.
The first was in Ostende, the beach
in
Belgium, because Jan Hoet had died, unfortunately, and there was like a salute to him. Somebody was organizing a big exhibition in Ostende, and they asked me, "Could you make something in honor of Jan Hoet?" And I said, "Yeah, okay, maybe I will do something with the Ghent altar," because that was his favorite work ever. There I put on the beach the frame, not the panels, but just the frame in iron. And it framed the sea, and it's a kind of tableau vivant. And the light is always different, and the view is always different. And sometimes there are huge waves, and sometimes it's calm. You cannot predict it. Mm-hmm. And what people can appreciate the void is that the city, the council of Ostende, didn't want to buy the piece, for the exhibition was temporal. And under pressure of the inhabitants of Ostende, they finally bought it. But if inhabitants of a city ask a council to buy it, then it's the world upside down.
Yeah.
So that was really
because
nice.
They identified with it so much.
Yes.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. When you mentioned the void, to my mind comes another piece of you, which is the bell, which is a large church bell swinging, but it's empty.
It has no clapper.
Yeah.
So it's moving without sound. The only sound is the cracking of the cushion. That's the wooden block between the construction and the actual bell. And even the wind, you hear the air moving.
You have to imagine it's a construction.
So again, there is lacking something.
Yeah.
If you want, it's maybe absurd. But at the same time, not, because I believe that the sound of the bell is being intensified in your head by your own imagination. By this absence of sound, maybe the sound is intensified somehow. Now, for some things, there are no words, like what's happening now in Ukraine, there are no words. And unfortunately, it has always happened. It's just human history, this misery. And I was reading, at the time that I made the flipboard, it was super hot, and I had to go from city to city by train in Italy. It was maybe more than 40 degrees in the train, but nevertheless, I had goosebumps. Mm-hmm. That was my personal air conditioning, reading For Whom the Bell Tolls by Ernest Hemingway about the Spanish Civil War. And I took it really literally, For Whom the Bell Tolls, like, okay, if it doesn't sound, it's like for everybody. If you look at it, it's for you, for your relatives, for your family. I mean, it's just for humanity. It's not just one or a bunch of soldiers who have died. It's just humanity. If there is now a problem in the world, it's not for Ukraine, it's for humanity. We we really need geopolitics and not geographical solutions.
Yeah.
Country per country or groups of countries against group of countries. And so the title was For Whom? And that came from the title of the novel by Ernest Hemingway, For Whom the Bell Tolls.
And how, when these ideas come to you, how you have a clear idea already how they look? Like we talked about the flatboard, the altar, the bell. Do you make then drawings to figure out how they should be, or do you know what it is?
I mostly know exactly how it should be, but therefore I sometimes really envy my colleagues, good friends, who give them a sheet of paper and they start drawing and they know what to draw. Actually, I have no inspiration at all. I mean, for me, it's like, as you say, I'm not an architect anymore, but I work like an architect. I have an idea and then we make plans, sketches and then plans, and then it's executed mostly by others because you cannot cast bronze in your kitchen. It's quite dangerous. And some things are very highly specialized, so I am completely depending on the skills of others all the time. Mm-hmm. But the advantage is that I have many media at my disposal, and as a consequence, I have contact with many different disciplines. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm working with a doctor, then who's taking x-rays. Then another time I'm working with an engineer. I'm working then with a sound engineer. It's always another medium and you learn a lot. And basically you use their skills for non-functional reasons. And therefore they love to cooperate. Mm-hmm. Because for them it's like, oh, it's something else.
Yeah.
Like a new scanner arrived in 2004 in Belgium by Siemens, like a first ring scanner in a clinic.
Yeah.
And they put me under the scanner for fun because I wanted my skull.
Your own skull.
My own skull, yeah. And I love classical themes. It's the million skull in art history, mm-hmm. but it's definitely the first one of a living person because before, death was the condition to make the skull visible, but now it's just technology, which is fantastic. But in the end, I didn't want to make people feel like, oh, this is highly technological, because mm-hmm. in the end, it was a bronze cast that could have been made by a Renaissance artist in the 16th century with a good knowledge of anatomy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what, it's so attracting.
So it's like a high tech,
it's really
vanitas object of, what is it, 2,000, 3,000 years?
Maybe older, yeah.
Something like this.
Yeah, that you are putting yourself in a long tradition.
Yeah.
But the difference is, with technology, you can make a cast of your own skull. And that is now what was very important. At the same time, you get anonymous by doing that, because you see a skull, but people don't recognize me. Although, all the skulls are different. If you would put our skulls now on the table, we would start laughing. Oh, this is definitely you, Johan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean.
Also interesting would be maybe to revisit this. But after 10 years, it's different, no?
Yeah. And there are programs, they have programs, they're very good programs for that, because you can do it all the way around. If you start from a skull, they can reconstruct faces.
Yeah.
Very accurately.
But I mean, now you could also, when did you do this piece?
In 2004, and then it was ready in 2005.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that was the beginning, because that was the highest resolution at that time. And it's quite okay. But if you would do it now, you would even have the texture of your
of the bone.
You would have the smallest detail imaginable.
Yeah. And tell me, but you also, because you refer to the book, you also copied Kafka's Verwandlung by hand?
On one sheet of paper.
But only on one sheet of paper.
Yeah.
So you made a handwritten copy of the book,
mm-hmm.
but you didn't, I mean, you also, you copied authors The Idiot, right?
Where you
changed the name into your name, if I remember that correctly.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, but with the Kafka Verwandlung, you kept on writing on the same piece of paper.
Until it was entirely black.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's literally
Verwandlung, right?
It's literally a transformation, because the entire story is definitely on that sheet of paper, but for I have written it over and over, it's not readable anymore. So it becomes an image.
It's funny, while we speak, we hear the church bells behind us, and we are sitting in a former church, How important is religion or religious education for your practice?
Enormously, because I'm fond of rituals and I'm very interested by differences in rituals. Look, we are talking about religion, but not about institution of the church. I mean, basically, I'm just very interested in everything that is not made by humans, you know? I mean, how should I say? I mean, no institutions with problems with power and abuse and things like that. And unfortunately, many people throw that away, the good things away with the bad things. Yeah, I try to filter because whether you want it or not, we are in a high degree influenced and programmed by Christian morality. Like when I would punch the lady beside me now, Danai, on the nose, you wouldn't need a thousandth of a second to feel that it's wrong. Before you can even start thinking, you would have the reaction of wrong. Why? Because we have an equivalent of genes, and it's called memes, that you are giving through from generation to generation. And in the, at Ghent University, there was a very interesting survey about memes. So the equivalence of your physical genes. Yeah. So whether we want it or not, our way of thinking or moral system is highly, highly influenced by Christian tradition. And also the iconography is very interesting. It's still very interesting if you look to an old master. I mean, I would love to see, for instance, Michael Bormans, a good friend of mine, a Belgian painter, if he would again paint the Annunciation, the birth of Christ. I mean, what all the old masters had to do, because they were meant to do it. They were, they had to do it from their, from the priests or bishops or whatever. Otherwise, they had to be very rich to make free work.
Yeah.
Like Jeroen Bosch was married to a very rich woman, and he could afford painting what he wanted. Yeah, but that was very rare at that time, for paint was extremely expensive. Yeah, you couldn't just, you know, do anything like you can now.
Talking about Hieronymus Bosch, you realized a golden funnel of solid gold.
Yes.
Maybe you can elaborate on this.
Well, I'm talking about Bruegel. You see at, on many paintings people with a funnel on their head. And of course, a funnel is made to make liquids converge. But if you put it upside down, then all the liquids are leaking off. But don't underestimate the little hole, because it's the symbol of idiocy, but what's coming in, and an idiot comes in, you know? It's like an absolute focus. So an upside down funnel is admitting liquid, but very concentrated, yeah? And so somehow it's the symbol of idiocy. And I was attracted to the following to make like a contradiction. You have the material gold that is used for crowns and jewelry to express power. And for me, power is idiocy, and idiocy is power. I can give examples. Jesus is power. Yeah, it's an idiot who makes himself, you know, he sacrifices himself on the cross. Innocent. The symbol of innocence, but it's highly powerful. It's like a baby. If you would have like a bunch of hooligans and you would put a baby amidst them, it has more chance to survive than when I would send you amidst them. Because this vulnerability represents an enormous power. And also vice versa. Every a power creates idiocy. And I can also give many examples of that. Look what's happening right now. The biggest idiots are trying to destroy the world.
But and how did you come to it? So is it also like an objet trouvé you see in the picture and then it materializes?
Yeah, but it's important to not just pick the image and to make it real. But this transformation is always very important. With every single piece of art, there should be a kind of transformation. Even without touching, you can have maybe not a thought about it. But my only gesture was, okay, I give this symbol of idiocy the material of power, gold. So you have a contradiction in one object. You have the idiocy and you have the power.
I mean, interesting is also this, the very early exhibition we did was a balloon in the gallery space in Dessauer Straße, which is a freestanding building, like a mini hangar or like a fabrication hall, former industrial fabrication hall. And you installed a balloon, like an air balloon, which was filled with not only air, was it helium?
Just air.
Yeah, was filled with air, but it was filling the entire space. But it was like the gallery space held down the balloon, and the basket was standing outside the gallery space, which I think also deals. Is it also related to, you know, the because you need an art space to show art, and then some of the art space is limiting the art. And but the fantastic thing was, people could walk into the balloon and found themselves in the exhibition space standing in the balloon.
Well, it's far more about making the spectators children than it would be a criticism concerning art in an art space or criticizing the art world. I mean, I was not intending to do that. It was just a dream, you know, to walk into a balloon, to transform the space into a hot air balloon. So with this little overpressure of air, the whole textile, the whole fabric was
completely attached to the wall, huh?
Completely sticking to the walls. Basically, the gallery was empty, but at the same time full.
Completely full, yeah.
Completely full. Yeah, and of course you have ballooning, the first way of flying in the 18th century. And that has been the dream of mankind for ages and ages. And then it's about this dream. It's maybe like the flipboard. It makes you dream, although it's nothing.
Yeah. And it was also interesting. I remember that we just organized this balloon. It was quite simple. Timo back then just found balloon club, which sold us a balloon which was out of function.
Yeah. Yeah. Every $1,000 or something, they have to replace the balloon, not the basket, because the fabric is getting crispy and it can be dangerous.
When you mentioned the meme, there's another piece which somehow came to my mind, or now finding ourselves in times of war again. There's a piece you also an objet trouvé, bomb shells from the First World War.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Where you see like the evil or the darkest in human being and beauty engraved into them. So but you didn't do anything, you just found them and cleaned them.
Yeah, exactly, just cleaned them. I met a farmer in Flanders, on the Flanders fields where the big battles took place. And I was struck by the fact that he had hundreds and hundreds of old bombshells. And some of them had engravings with flowers, also with other things, but I was very attracted to the flowers because the flower is, of course, like a symbol of peace, but then engraved on used bombshells. So if you have such a shell in your hand, you know that it has been used. Otherwise, the bomb would be still on top. And I was also struck by the fact that he had Allied bombshells and German. So I made a mixture of German and Allied, because the enemies are together, and you had a big pile of used weapons, and at the same time you have a big pile of flowers when somebody's murdered or something, or when Diana died, there were like big piles of flowers, you know? So it's again this contradiction I really like. And also this historical aspect, because it's not fake, they're actually used.
Mm. And they were handmade by them who died now, probably in war.
Some were made in the trenches. They are the very simple ones, but then to take back as a souvenir for the lovers, for the mamas and the...
Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a present when you survived the war to bring back to your family.
Okay.
And then the family proudly put this on the mantle at home. As a kid, I remember very well that very old people had always bombshells on the mantle, decorated bombshells.
Yeah.
Yeah. But many of them were engraved after the war, and they are more elaborate.
Now you have an exhibition in the church again. I think it's, I mean, you had one here in the church.
I don't know what's wrong with me, but it's always in churches. And my gallerist has bought a church for fun. No.
And what will you exhibit? Because also there you...
not really an exhibition. I was asked to make something, but it doesn't function really as an exhibition space. So I was more thinking about an intervention. I don't even dare to say installation, but it has become a kind of installation. But it was a very complex story because the Protestant Church is celebrating this year a very important discussion between Luther, Martin Luther, and the iconoclasts. And the main question was, image or no image?
Yeah.
And so finally, apparently, Luther, with his arguments, won the discussion by saying, well, images are per definition not dangerous, but they're also not functional. So something like, why not? And
yeah.
He added, it's even a proof of being a bad, that you're not a true believer when you're afraid of image.
Yeah.
And I understand this back in time as a kind of criticism toward Islam, where image is forbidden.
Yeah.
I mean, that's only me, but why is he expressing this so explicitly? Huh? But anyway, and what you can make work about Luther and about... But at the same time, as an artist, it's also important to get rid of it at some point, you know, and to make art. And the only thing I filtered out, how important and interesting the discussion might be, I'm not underestimating it.
And given the frame of the church, fully functioning church, right?
Yes, a fully functioning church.
Where you can't just put an empty bell in or...
And then the Passion time. So it's the from Ash Wednesday, that they put a little ash cross on your forehead, Asher Mittwoch, till Eastern.
Yeah.
So again, a layer. And so you have so many layers. The only thing I filtered out was the question, image or no image. And although making images is my job, I have chosen for no image.
Yeah.
And what I did was burning objects that have to do with the passion of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So a vine, linen, a table, the Last Supper, and then bread, a fish. I burned the fish. And then finally, human. So I went to the barber shop and I collected lots of hair.
Okay, not a whole body human.
No.
Element from a human.
Yes, because it's growing on and on. I couldn't burn somebody for my work.
I mean, you have buried someone in the past on the Walker Art Center Sculpture Park.
I buried somebody, yes. And in the Aachener Stadtpark as well, yeah.
Officially?
Yes.
Yeah, like as a sculpture underneath.
I'm not a morbid person, actually. I mean, it's more morbid to avoid the idea of death. I mean, when you are fully aware of the idea of death, you are a living person, then you are really aware of being alive. Now, anyway, I went to a barbershop because I don't want to fake. It should be really human. It should be real bread. It should be a fish. And somebody made a beautiful movie. It's shown parallel to my installation in a little chapel beside the apsis on a monitor with a fantastic sound. The guy is amazing who did it. Now, what I did with the remains
it's
of...
what's to see on the video, you burning all these things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you, thing per thing, you see a black screen and then the screen says, for instance, vine. Huh? And that's okay. And then you see...
How do you burn wine? It's a Weinstein.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not the wine. Well, actually, I was trying to burn wine, but it was very difficult. Because when you... no kidding. Because when you dry it, the rest is almost nothing. And then... So I said, no, the vine is very important in the Bible because Jesus is saying, I am the true vine.
Yeah.
You
know?
So as a symbol, it's... And of course, a vine makes grapes. And with grapes, you make the wine. So it's not that far away. And you see the movie and everything is, thing after thing is being burned.
Yeah.
And with the ashes that I brought here to Berlin, I have mentioned again the things that have been burned. So you read bread, you read fish, you read, and then in the apsis you read human.
Okay, so you wrote these words...
With the ashes, with my fingers.
From the equivalent... burnt element.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you could, of course, fake it easily because just take an ashtray in the pub beside.
No, we believe you.
Well, the priest was there all the time, so I had to be very careful.
And if you lie?
Yeah,
you
if I lie, I have to confess. Yeah.
Are you Catholic?
Christian, not Catholic.
Okay, but then there's no confession.
No, exactly.
Oh, no, wait, confession, yes, but there's no, how you call it? Oh, yeah, you get over your sins when you confession,
well,
right?
Well, when I was a kid, I was a really brave, a silent kid. I mean, the best kid in the world. I mean, not wild, not growling, mm-hmm. just doing nothing. Mm-hmm. I was just observing, but and never saying, always obeying, because my father was really harsh. But then I was 11 and I had to confess for the first time. Mm-hmm. And everybody went to confess. And I sat on my chair, I didn't move, and they said, Martin, confessing, you have to confess. I said, no. So big fuss, because it was a very difficult school, you know, a very old-fashioned. And the priest comes to me very angrily and says, why don't you want to confess? And I was a small boy, and I said, I don't believe in absolution. Mm-hmm. And they left me alone, and for the next year, I never had... Never had to confess. How stupid is that? If I kill you now, and I go to a priest and I say I'm so sorry for it.
Yeah, that's why they have a good life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
it's
anyway.
Like the Cologne Carnival. So
That's why it's really funny. I made many many posters already with very simple. It says life after death.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's mm-hmm. printed with big letters. Yeah. Then it says time, place, and. For whom, and then time and place. And they are blank, and then I fill them in. So the collectors buy it, and then 2 weeks later they ask, it was a long time ago when we did it, we should do it again, it's really funny. Oh, my wife is very angry because I bought one at the fair or something, but she has no poster, and I want one for my son and my daughter, and even cats and dogs I did already.
Yeah. To you that people can buy life.
But that's how the church became very, very rich.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they...
Yeah, voilà. Yeah.
Yeah, to explain St. Matthäus, actually the viewer is now doing my job because you read a word, you read bread, and everybody has his or her mm-hmm. archetype mm-hmm. in mind, and it's always different.
The image exists.
You will see another bread than I see. And you will see another fish than I see. And so I'm not doing my job, but indirectly I do it because you see a very simple word and you imagine how it looks like automatically.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Johan.